Everywhere one of the United States Ministers, 12th Air Force Coast Guard Service Training Congregation at Hampton Territory. In the Oregon, Texas, today is July 8, 2023, or the 21st day of the 4th month, 2027. We will start our first service on the Sabbath of the song entitled Higher Ground. Pressing on the upward way, the heights I'm gaining every day. Still praying as I'm onward bound, up on my feet on higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand. Faith on heaven's table land, a higher place than I have found. Your path my feet on higher ground. My heart has no desire to stay where death arrives and fears dismay. Some may dwell where these abound. My prayer, my aim is higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand. My faith on heaven's table land. A higher way than I have found. You'll plant my feet on ground. I want to live above the world. Your sentence died, let me a hurl. For faith is taught, the joyful sound, the song of saints on higher ground. Now lift me up. Let me stand, if it on heaven's table land, a higher plane than I have found, up at my feet on higher ground. I want to scale the utmost high and catch every beam. A glory bright, and still I pray till heaven I found. My hand is on the higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand. I faith on heaven's table land, a higher place. Up on my feet on higher ground. Our sermon today is going to be taken from track number 6 by V.T. Hollett, entitled Why Perish. We're going to first have our prayer thought taken though from Proverbs chapter 11. A false balance is an abomination unto the Yahweh, but a just rate is his delight. When pride cometh, then cometh sin, but with the lowly is wisdom. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. Riches profit not in the day of the wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death. For the righteousness of the perfect shall direct his way, but the wicked shall fall by his own wickedness. For the righteousness of the upright shall deliver them, that the transgressors shall be taken in their own naughtiness. When a wicked man dieth, his expectation shall perish, and the hope of the unjust men perishes. For the righteous is delivered out of trouble, and the wicked cometh in his stead. An hypocrite with his mouth destroyeth his neighbor. That through knowledge shall the just be delivered. Right here it is, right here. Through your knowledge, through the knowledge of the truth, understanding it aright and obeying it aright, shall the just be delivered. When it goeth well with the righteous, the city rejoices. And when the wicked perish, there is shouting. By the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. He that is void of the wisdom despises his neighbor, but a man of understanding holdeth his peace. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. Where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of the counselors there is safety. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure. A gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches. For the merciful man doeth good unto his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh. For the wicked worketh a deceitful work. Unto him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. As the righteousness tendeth to life, so he that pursueth evil pursueth it unto his own death. They that are of a forward heart are abomination unto the Yahweh. But such as are upright in their way are his delight. Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished. But the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. As a jewel of gold and a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. For the desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. There is a scattereth and yet increases, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. For the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. He that diligently seek good procureth favor, but he that seeketh mischief, it shall come unto him. He that trusteth in his riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish as a branch. He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind, and the fool shall be servant unto the wise of the heart. For the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. Behold, the righteous shall be recompensed in the earth much more than the wicked and the sinner. End of a prayer thought. We will now go into our regular study. My parish, tract number 6 of Ichihara. It says the universal dairy will feed you, judge for yourself. For the purpose of this trout being to introduce and to deliver free of charge unto every honest soul, even unto the poorest and to the remotest one of the earth, for the superabundant product par excellence of the great universal dairy, it is therefore necessary to remove from the way of its recipient, for the able work of its competitor, of the many present day attacks made by this enemy against the very host of the patrons, there has doubtless been none so violent as that against the Seventh-day Adventist denomination. For the main user of the dairy's product, and especially against the work of the denomination's founder, Mrs. E.G. White, whose writings are known by the organization to be the Spirit of the Prophecy, Revelation 12, 17, Revelation 19:10, is it not inconsistent that so much time, energy, and money are spent by the various individuals and organizations to give adverse publicity unto anyone author of the religious literature, while overshadowing the world are hundreds of Christian isms and authors, each trying to vindicate a religious view different from the others. Since there is only one truth, and since no two sects are in absolute agreement as to what it is, naturally, not all can be right, but all save one must be wrong. Why then should Mrs. White's teachings come in for more opposition in the proportion and to the size of the following than in any of the others? As every heaven-sent messenger from the Adam's day unto this has been bitterly fought by men professing to be led of the Yahweh, then the mere fact of the opposition against Mrs. White's writing would not prove her wrong, and insomuch as she has become the main target of the opposition today, as were the prophets in their day, then for the determining whether her writings are dangerous and doomed, or safe and sound, we must turn our attention unto the oracles of the Yahweh, which reveal the past, present, and the future. For there her work, right or wrong, must be found. By the prophecies only can we prove or disprove, know what we believe and believe what we know, and with safety accept or reject any message. Otherwise our faith can be founded only upon the uncertainties, upon a sandy foundation, which will in the end bring us disappointedly unto the Master's left hand. So to make sure of the standing of his right hand, we must not fail to give the earnest heed unto the pleadings of the Holy Spirit. We have also a more sure of the prophecy, for until you do well to take heed as unto a light that shines in a dark place, until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts, knowing this first, that no prophecy of the Scripture is of any private interpretation. So 2 Peter 1:19 and 20. But the hue and cry of the opposition is, away with the prophecies at this time. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until Bijan, Matthew 11:13. If the aforequoted scripture means that there were to be no more prophets after John, then there should have been none since that time, and were this the meaning, then the scriptures would contradict themselves, for they bear evidence that while the Yahshua was the son of the Yahweh, he was also a prophet, Luke 24:19. And although John the Baptist never wrote a single prophetic utterance, yet he was rated by Yahshua with the greatest of the prophets, Luke 7:28. Also Matthew, Mark, and Luke uttered the Spirit, with the spirit of the inspiration, wrote concerning Yahshua and his work. Likewise, John, Peter, and Paul, and others contemporary with them, prophesied in their own right of the many things to come. All these are scripturally accorded the title prophet, for Yahshua himself testifies that the book of the Revelation is a prophecy for the angel to bear record of the word of Yahweh and of the testimony of Yahshua and of all the things that he saw, says, blessed is he that readeth and they that hear the words of this prophecy and keep those things which are written therein, for the time is at hand. Revelation 1:2-3. Revelation chapter 1, verse 2 and 3. For I testify unto every man that heareth the words of the prophecy of this book. If any man shall add unto these things, Yahweh shall add unto him the plagues that are written in this book. Revelation 22:18. Now, the fact that this prophecy was written nearly a century after the John the Baptist was beheaded as historical acknowledgement that the prophets did not cease with him. Thus, in the midst concerning Matthew 11:13, so as to make John the last of the prophets, the opposition is attempting for the substituting for the gift of the prophecy in the apostolic era, private and inspired interpretations of the scriptures. And in doing this, they are led either for the ignoring or for the trying to explain away the irrefutable statements of the Paul. And Yahweh has set some in the church, first apostles, secondary prophets, thirdly teachers, after that miracles, then the gifts of healing, helps, governments, diversities of the tongues, 1 Corinthians 12:28, absolute evidence that the second of the eight gifts to the church in the apostolic era is the prophets. While most of these gifts, especially tongues and governments, are zealously sought after by the apostolic churches today, the antipodal apostolic churches, which would be your Protestant churches today, which didn't continue on into the Sabbath, I left them as Sunday keepers, so they are with the title of Protestant churches yet today, Sunday keepers. The one the prophets that was despised, let's do that again. While most of these gifts, especially tongues and governments, are zealously sought after by the Protestant churches of today, the one of the prophets that was despised by the Jews is wholly rejected by almost all of Christendom. That's talking about, when we say all of Christendom, we're talking about the Seventh-day Adventist Church inclusive. Thus, the spirit that instigated the killing of the ancient Syrians at the hand of the Jewish leader is that they doing virtually the same sort of the destructive work through the organized opposition. While ascribing praise and honor unto the dead prophets who were slain by the forefathers, the Jews rejected the living prophets, thereby bringing upon themselves the master's mournful pronouncement. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tomb of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous, and say, if we had been in the days of our father, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophet. Matthew 23:29-30. Present day antitypical apostolic believers who despise the gift of prophecy. Okay, let's do it again. Let's call it like it is. It's always talking about these Sunday-keeping Christians. He may as well be talking about the Seventh-day Adventists inclusive with them, because they're just like them. For the present-day Christendom, inclusive of the Seventh-day Adventists, who despise the gift of the prophecy, and the Adventist despises the gift of prophecy, and this is, and also deny that the Old Testament scriptures have any application in the teaching of the Father of salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant, dispensation of the Yahshua, as in Hebrews 10:19-20, as a new and living way, are thereby rejecting all of the prophets, while at the same time acknowledging that they were the servants of the Yahweh. So such church members continue to build and to garnish tombs of the prophets, as did the Jews who came to believe in the Moses, but when tested were found to be liars. In the like manner, most Christians today, I'm talking about again all Protestantism, and then the Catholics, they call themselves Christians too, so, and the Adventists call themselves Christians, so they're all lumped into one big lump. Catholics and Adventists and all of your Sunday-keeping Protestant churches, Baptists, Methodists, Lutherans, and Presbyterians, and instead of Church of Christ, all of them, most today, profess to believe the whole Bible. Yet, teach that all the laws and statutes, all the warnings and condemnations apply only to the ancient Jew, whereas the gracious they eagerly emboss them within the Christian church. Now here V.T. Holler is talking about all these churches. Then Protestants and then the Christian churches. And he's including the Seventh-day Adventists as one of them. Yet V.T. Holler is a Davidian Seventh-day Adventist. And yet V.T. Holler don't teach that we're supposed to keep all the statutes and judgments. Matter of fact, he interprets the statutes and judgments wrong. And then he says we're not going to have to keep them here in the United States. We're going to keep the statutes and the feast days. We get into the land of Israel. That's when it'll be restored. But who's going to restore them over there in the land of Israel? He's also in charge of Yahweh's kingdom right at the time that he was talking here. So Beit Yahweh, see, he was at the head, all right, but he was not inclusive. He should have included the shepherd right also, and all this Christendom that is all lumped together, because all people are out of us are the Seventh Day Adventists. And all he was doing was giving who the rod and who had the point of Micah 6:9, that he was instructed to teach. Whenever he took over and started teaching the rod in 1930, he was instructed to teach who the rod and who had the point of Micah 6:9. For the present day, so-called gift of the tongues is gibberish, and there is no more the biblical gift than is Sunday, the sanctified Sabbath day, and the gift of the government is degenerated into an institution of the prerogatives, formalities, goals, and the like, that in their present low estate are not but agencies that in effect militate against the truth and neutralize the piety of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. In this state of the affairs, so the best of these professed Christians of today seem better than the worst of yesterday's Jews. Awake, awake, cries the word. Loose thyself from the man-wrought bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. Isaiah 52:2. Quench not the spirit, O congregation of the Yahweh. Despise not the prophesying. Prove all things. Hold fast that which is good. 1 Thessalonians 5:19-21. Do not longer overlook the fact that the gift of the prophets is second in order, and the gifts of the government and diversity of the times are last. Mark therefore that those who despise the gift of the prophecy must exalt the gifts of the governments and tongues and manifest it, pulling the cart from its rear end, and are going in this in the wrong direction. Unto them thou seest sin. Knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked? In Revelation 3:17, those who on the one hand contend that there were to be no more prophets after John the Baptist, and who on the other hand profess to be in the New Testament scripture that were written after John's death, are in themselves in the darkness and are by their private uninspired interpretations of the scriptures spreading as a cloud of the darkness wherever they go. May the Yahweh have mercy on them all. Okay, said. And a lot of these facts, Yahshua's statement that all the prophets and the law prophesied unto John, obviously has a totally different meaning from what has been taught by the uninspired men, when it is illuminated by the same Spirit who indicted it, the resulting interpretation is trouble-free. The view that Yahshua separated the prophets into a twofold classification, those until John and those after him. For the sacred history shows that the prophets in the first division received their word directly from the Yahweh through the medium of his spirit, for they were not obliged to prove any part of their prophecies by the writings of the preceding prophets. Whereas the prophets in this second division are appointed by the unction of the Spirit to interpret the writings of the prophets of the first division. Now this all important distinction and division shows that the Old Testament scriptures contain the light of our salvation for both periods, Jewish and Christian. And when one considers that the former period is called the typical dispensation, and the latter, the antitypical, then evidence upon evidence rivets the conclusion that the New Testament gospel is based on the gospel of the old unfolded. Since the scriptures explain that the house of Israel in all ages has been led into the truth only through the gift of the prophecy, the believer has no choice but to conclude that the Yahweh's will and plan for this time is just as it was for times past. That is, that the knowledge of the salvation be imparted through the writings of the Old Testament prophets as interpreted by those upon whom, as the scroll unfolds, he bestows the same spirit by the which he moved upon holy men of Yahweh in the old times. 2 Peter 1:21. For I am the Yahweh, I change not, therefore ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Malachi 3:6. For Yahweh would have ever kept Christendom united through the inspiration, revealed truth, that uninspired men would not humble themselves and forego their own private interpretation, with the tragic result that they have brought the present shameful sectarian confusion, such an anarchy of the opinion on the scriptures, existing not only between the denomination and another, but also within the ranks of each one itself, makes clear that they are not led by the Spirit whom Yahshua sent to guide into all the truth, so that all believers in Him might be as one. This union through the Spirit is forcibly taught in the Yahshua's prayer, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me, and the glory which thou gavest me I have given them, that they may be one even as we are one, I in them and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one, and that the world may know that thou hast sent me and hast loved me as thou hast loved me, hast loved them as thou hast loved me. John 17:21-23. Unceasing theological speculations on the scriptures, with the resultant diversity of the opinion and pleasing fables, are continually increasing confusion, dissensions, divisions, which spawn conflicting creeds and sects, whereas Christians should be doing nothing but proving unto the world by the perfect union that the Father has sent the Son, showing that he recognizes only one denomination. For Yahshua said, and other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd, John 10:16. For the existing disunion among the Christians of today is not therefore fulfilling Yahweh's, but Satan's predetermined purpose as the so-called Christian world of today has so far drifted from the Yahweh's ideal for his church as to have arrived at a point where even Yahshua's own prayer fails to disillusion them and to bring them unto a realization that their very beliefs of being all right are sure to be all wrong. Those who are not affiliated with any church and for whose conversion the church is claimed to be fully exerting their means and time look on with scorn and laughter at this delusion and hypocrisy. Such Christians are only pleasing Satan and cheating themselves and those who watch them. For Satan is leading these quasi-Christian legions for the parading as the fools before the world, so that through their unconscious folly he may cast reproach upon Yahshua and at the same time may make the world believe that the Father has not sent the Son. Unless united ranks awake to their plight, Satan will shortly plunge them headlong into the eternal destruction, for this everlasting tragedy would be chargeable only unto their despising of the gifts of the spirit of prophecy. For the eyes of the church, as the eyes of the church, 1 Samuel 9:9, Isaiah 29:10, which alone can see for the drawing them into a state of the oneness of the unbreakable unity, shepherds of the churches, and attempting to interpret the scriptures privately without the Holy Spirit's, and I might add that without the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, have set husk before the sheep, and as a result, the flocks have been left to forage for themselves in search of something better. Husk-fed Christians, being undernourished, are incapable of the right judging. Some therefore hope to obtain the something better from those whom they regard as the most faithful. Others expect to receive it from those who are regarded as the most learned doctors of the divinity, while still others think to find it in this or that denomination simply because father or mother or some other influential person or relative belongs to it. By these foolish choices that require no exertion of the mind or no personal experience, they are ironically only led again to hush, and the non-Christian world, ever critically looking on, turns into disgust from this and other inconsistent and foolish practices in the Christian scene. Thus believers, instead of converting unbelievers to the Christianity, are only driving them further from it. That others too are well aware of this fatal sheep-like follow the bell instinct is pointedly demonstrated in the hypothetical case of the family scene in the satirical caricature from the pen of the culminator. Mary goes to the Baptist church, although she is a member of the Presbyterian church, having been made to join the church at the tender age of 10, before she knew who the Yahshua or the devil really is. because she attends the Baptistian church because her stepsister belongs. John goes to the Catholic church because most of his customers go there. Jack goes to the Campanian church because his gal goes. Patricia goes to the Lutheran church because her school teacher teaches Sunday school class there. Betty goes to the Baptistian church with her mother because she ain't old enough yet to know better. That was printed in the Dallas Morning News of December 28, 1940. Those who are honestly seeking salvation through the Yeshua must join him by the conversation for the truth's sake, and the only way one can do this is gladly to welcome all the gifts of the Spirit. Okay, it says, and he says, Paul, of the one word alone. Let's say it again. And he says, Paul, of the one who alone, through all his gifts, can unify his church, gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Yeshua, till we all come in the unity of the faith. This is the unity, coming to the unity of the faith. Faith in what? Faith in the blood of the Yeshua. Martin Luther came out of the Catholic Church when he discovered the doctrine of justification by grace through the blood of the Yeshua. When he was reading the Bible one night that was loaned to him there in the Catholic monastery, he came to the realization that the only way you can have be saved is through faith in the blood of the Yeshua. And lo and behold, go back into the stream of time to Abraham's day. And that's what Abraham believed and taught. Faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yeshua. Okay. And of the knowledge of the Son of Yahweh unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Yeshua. Ephesians 4:11-13. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. Revelation 3:22. Though the Spirit of Yahweh has spoken in these certain terms, yet one finds upon the polling of the general opinion among Christians that the spirit of the prophecy is virtually rejected. For a large class of professing Christians are really saying in their hearts, as long as we believe that there is a God and a Christ, belong to a church, and lead honest lives, and do an occasional good deed as opportunity affords, we are on the way to the holy city. And sad to say, this loose and fatally diffusive hope is even in the Seventh-day Adventist denomination. Sadly, too, though, the denomination was founded by the gift of the prophecy, its present-day members, ministers, and laity alike are at the continual variance among themselves over the prophetic gift, just as they are over other matters in the Scriptures. And among those who do who hold that the writings of Mrs. White are inspired, the great majority are as ignorant of and as disobedient unto them as are those who profess no faith at all in them. Okay, Vincent Hollis, just like all the other preachers, he's teaching everything but the plan of salvation above the everlasting covenant, which is number one most important thing to learn and teach, and obedience to all of his statutes and judgments, all of his holy days. That was Vincent Hollis actually commissioned, as it was Ellen G. White's commission, to restore the sanctuary system, put it back in its rightful order, and teach the obedience to all the statutes and judgments and restore all the holy days. That was Ellen G. White's commission. She didn't do it. Richie Hollis said we'll do it when we get into the land, and he didn't do it. Ben Roden, Richie Hollis' successor in 1955, he didn't do it. He tried keeping feast days and the daily, and he practiced his own version of it. He believed that it should be done, but he didn't know how to do it. And Vincent Hollis succeeded Ben Rhodes in 1970. Roland W. Johnson succeeded Ben Rhodes in 1970. And I joined Roland Johnson in 1970. And he restored all the feast days, restored the creation calendar and the ordained system of true worship, the daily, practiced it and taught it. Yet he apostatized from it in the end, and he's no more to be considered as anything in the future to fulfill prophecy. It's true. Now we have that responsibility to teach the whole ball of wax. Let's go ahead. For the church, she says, relative unto this condition, has turned back from the fallen Yahshua, her leader, and is steadily retreating toward Egypt. Yet few are alarmed or astonished at the want of the spiritual power. Doubt and even disbelief of the testimonies of the Spirit of Yahweh is leavening our churches everywhere. For Satan would have it thus. Ministers who preach self instead of Yahshua would have it thus. For the testimonies are unread and unappreciated. Yet both classes in the church insist that they are good Seventh-day Adventists. Oh, what exceeding irony that such dreadful inconsistencies in the sacred matters have overshadowed the minds of the rational beings. Yet what tragedy, especially when the condition need never have been for an ample protection against it. For the scriptures teach the truth in several ways. Besides being taught by the literal testimonies of the prophets, the gospel is taught also by the figurative prophecies. So the gospel is a sanctuary system taught and restored. The keeping all the statutes and judgments, that's the gospel. Because the sanctuary system restored and practiced, you're introduced to the blood that you have to have any sanctuary service at all. You can't have it without the blood. And the blood is where you get your salvation, through faith in the blood. So it says the scriptures teach the truth in several ways. Besides being taught by the literal testimonies of the prophets, the gospel is taught also by the figurative prophecy. Well, it's how to see the thing is, this word gospel is a misleading word. It should be the teaching of the plan of salvation by the everlasting covenant is taught also by the figurative prophecies. But not practiced, only taught if they teach at all. And our immediate concern, therefore, with the Spirit's teaching as to how Yahweh reveals unto men his written word, we must give consideration not only unto the literal, but also unto the figurative testimonies of the prophets. And as the fourth chapter of the Zechariah is a pictorial disclosure of the way in which Yahweh reveals his word, we are led therefore for an exposition of the figurative mode of the inspired interpretations. Zechariah chapter 4. Yeah, we've got a little time, but we have for this hour. This is the figurative mode of the inspired interpretation, Zechariah 4. And the angel that talked with me came again and waked me as a man that is wakened out of his sleep, and said unto me, What seest thou? And I said, I have looked, and behold, a candlestick, all of the gold, with a bowl upon the top of it. And the seven lamps thereon, and seven pipes unto the seven lamps which are up on the top thereof, and two olive trees by it, one upon the right side of the bowl, and the other upon the left side thereof. So I answered and spake unto the angel that talked with me, saying, What are these, my master? Then the angels that talked with me answered and said unto me, Knowest thou not what these be? And I said, No, my master. Then he answered and spake unto me, saying, This is the word of the Yahweh unto the Zerubbabel, saying, Not by the might nor by power, but by my spirit, said the Yeshua of the host. That's the Son. And I answered again and said unto him, What be these two olive branches which through the two golden pots empty the golden oil out of themselves? And he answered me and said, Knowest thou not what these be? And I said, No, my master. Then said he, These are the two appointed ones that stand by the Yeshua, that's talking about the Son, of the whole earth. Zechariah 4, 1 to 6, and 12 to 14. For the establishing of the time for this figurative prophecy points the Yeshua speaking through the prophet Haggai, who prophesied at the same time as did the prophet Zechariah, said, And I will overthrow the throne of the kingdom, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen, and I will overthrow the chariots of those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. And that day, said the Yahshua the host, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of the Shealtiel, saith the Yahshua, and will make these as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith the Yahshua the host. This is the Son talking. Haggai 2:22 and 23. For the meeting is a fulfillment at the end of the world, when the Yahweh is to overthrow the thrones and destroy the kingdoms of the earth. Haggai's prophecy shows that the Zerubbabel, as a Yahshua's servant, is a type of his servants today, who necessarily, therefore, are the antitypical signet. And as Zechariah's vision, moreover, has never been understood until now, it can be speaking directly only unto us at this time, since according to his illustration of the word of the Yahshua unto Zerubbabel, is defined as fulfillment today, we ought then to give the most studious attention as the inspiration explains the symbolism. This is the word of the Yahshua under the Zerubbabel, Zechariah 4, 6. For the method which the Yahweh is to use now in the time of the end and communicating with the Zerubbabel, the governors or ministers of his people, is laid down in the symbolism. So let us carefully decipher it symbol by symbol, when we understand the meaning of the olive trees, the candlestick, the golden bowl, and the tubes, then by the symbolism itself will without controversy explain how the scriptures by which Yahweh communicates with his servants are to be interpreted. Then he says, as all the books of the Bible made an end in the Revelation, that is an unfolding of the prophecies, we call the reader's attention unto a passage therein, where John records the office of these olive trees, and I will give power unto my two witnesses, and that's in Revelation 11, shall prophesy 1,260 days clothed in the sackcloth. These are the two olive trees, which represents the Old and New Testament scriptures, and the two candlesticks, which represents the Old and New Testament, each standing before the Yeshua of the earth. They're standing before him. So Yeshua has come, and now those prophecies have got to be fulfilled with him in Revelation chapter 11. About the two olive trees, the two candlesticks, the two witnesses, what they all represent. For these olive trees are called witnesses, anointed ones, prophets. They were to prophesy and the sackcloth for the space of 42 months. This is a period equivalent to that to Daniel 7:25 and Revelation 12:14. That is to a time and times and the divide of time. A time 1 year, times 2 years, half a time, half a year. 42 months in total, it is equivalent also to that in the Revelation 13:5, 40 and 2 months, and to that in Revelation 12:6, 1,200. And 60 days. In the earth, in each instance, the time reckoning by the biblical rule of the 30 days to a month amounts to 1,260 days. Okay, it says, when computed in the literal time according to Ezekiel 4:6, these 1,260 days of the prophetic time are equivalent unto the 1,260 years. Preceding on the well-established fact, see the Shepherd God, Volume 2, page 126 to 139, that this period of the time is prophetic of the 1260 years from the 538 A.D. to 1798 A.D., that was the time given for the Catholic Inquisition, 1260 years. We are brought to the consequent confusion that whosoever or whatsoever prophesied in the sackcloth during this period is that which is symbolized by these two olive trees. The fact that nothing but the Bible itself did prophesy for the duration of the 1260 year period during the dark ages of the religion by the Catholic Church, having church and state rule over the world during that 1260 year period, automatically shows that the two olive trees that the angel said are the word of Yahweh, that therefore says, are figurative of the Old and New Testament scriptures prophesying in the sackcloth. In other words, they permitted themselves and self-abasement to be tucked away and left unstudied, although they had power to devour their enemies. And even in the shut heaven, that it rain not. And from these two trees, testaments, as Zechariah saw the golden oil runs through two golden pipes, which emptied themselves into the golden bowl. Then from the bowl, the seven pipes or tubes in turn supply the golden candlesticks with the golden oil. As the two olive trees stand for the Old and New Testament scriptures, naturally, the golden oil flowing from them represents the word of the Yahweh in the apostolic dispensation not as it comes directly from the heaven, but as it comes from the Bible, unlocking next the meaning of the candlestick, the sure, and the revealing of the mystery, which he showed unto John, said, for the seven stars are the angels of the seven candlesticks, and the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches, Revelation 1:20. In this brief explanatory statement, Yahshua tells us that the seven churches are represented by the seven candlesticks, thus establishing the truth that a candlestick is symbolic of the church as the light of the world, Matthew 5:14. For the first part of Revelation 1:20, as already quoted, makes clear that there is an attending angel unto each candlestick, and that John was instructed to write, not to the candlesticks, but to the angels who have the charge over them. Thus the words, unto the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, and Rhodes was the last angel appointed. Rhodes W. Johnson, Gilead Center, Columbia, Texas, 1970 to 2003. He was the last angel appointed over that seventh candlestick, Laodicea. And he was the one that was spewed out that the Revelation 3:14 to 17 talks about. Thus the words, unto the angel, Rhodes W. Johnson, Columbia, Texas, Gilead Center, 2002, of the church of the Laodiceans, the Gilead Center was the last section of the Laodicean Church of the Adventist, right, Revelation 3:14. Make clear that it is the angel who is wretched and miserable and poor and blind and living. It is only one person. It's not the whole church. It's one person that is blind, and that was Rhoda Stephen Johnson. So I was with him in 2002. Yahshua came and visited the Gilead Center at the Passover 2002, and he relieved that angel of his duties, and he spewed him out, and he passed the commission on to his successor, Elijah David, Malachi 4:5, and that's when the judgment of the dead closed, and that's when the judgment of the living opened up. Starting at the Passover 2002 at connotation. Okay, for this condemnation conclusively shows that the angel, Rhodes W. Johnson, is not a heavenly being, but merely a figure of the earthly overseers who have been given charge over the Gilead Center, the third section of church of the Seventh-day Adventist candlestick, for their duty as a symbolism reveals is to supply the candlestick with the oil. And that's what Rhodes Johnson was given. Yahweh's government to teach. He was given the light on restoration of the sanctuary system and all the feast days and back to the true time. He's given the light on that to make a creation calendar showing everybody how to keep the feast days at the correct time and how to do it, and to keep it trimmed and burning, giving light. Consequently, the candlestick itself symbolizes the membership exclusive of the leaders. Okay. In the Zechariah's vision, however, the ministers are represented not by the seven angels, but by the seven tubes. They get the oil from the bowl and feed it to the candlestick. Clearly then, the bowl in which the golden oil is stored symbolizes the storehouse of the present truth, the word interpreted as the only storehouse that contains inspired comments on both testaments and the books of the spirit of prophecy. They therefore are the golden bowl. For the symbolism definitely points out that from the ministers must get the light producing truth with which to supply the church so that it may brightly shine in this dark world, drawing to the light all men who hate the darkness. For the two pots to which the oil is stirred into the bowl can represent only the channels, prophets through whom the oil is transferred from the Bible into the bowl, in the period during which both olive trees, Old and New Testaments, live the Christian era. Lie. Let the reader take a searching look at the visual illustration on page 18, and he will see the utter impossibility of the candlesticks, the church memberships, and of the tubes ministers themselves extracting oil directly from the olive tree. For the interpretation of the scriptures, therefore, being entrusted unto the two pipes, prophets, in the apostolic era of the New Testament, it shows that no prophecy of the scriptures of any private interpretation, but is of the inspiration only. Now for the question forever in our minds, the truth on this all-important subject, let us view it in a summary of the Zechariah 4. This brings the person by study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on the audio archive room code number the song.